I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts. Hey, friends, thanks for joining us for this episode of Creative Guts.
Today we're talking with Rachel Jones of Hot Cross Puns. Rachel creates fun and offbeat handmade cross stitches and other embroidery framed and sold with love and snark.
Rachel is as funny as her art is, and it is not a huge surprise that recording this episode was hilarious. So without further ado, let's get to the good stuff.
To the guts of Rachel Jones. Welcome to Creative Guts, Rachel.
Well, thanks, guys.
We're so happy to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming all the way to our studio.
Absolutely.
I've been a long admirer and owner of your work.
That's right.
Yeah, yes. I actually had you do a custom piece. Do you remember?
I did. Your cool little nerdy dice, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually wearing a D20.
Yes, you are.
We were just talking about that. Ultra nerd right
here. I love
here.
It. That's why I'm here.
So for folks that aren't familiar with your work, why don't you start off by telling us about your cross stitch, your business, and describe your style along with that?
Sure. So the briefest way that I describe it is just saying it's a little fun and offbeat embroidery work. Some of my pieces are, I don't know how to say this, rated R for language, I guess. But they're not all that way. It really sort of encompasses my entire sense of humor, I think. And some of that involves bad words. But like I said, not always. My business is called Hot Cross Puns. So I started with a lot of just little punny blips or a couple words with an accompanying picture of some sort that I think are funny. I think puns are hilarious. If somebody comes into a stand when I'm doing an art show and they roll their eyes and immediately go, "Ugh," I'm like, yes, I did it. That's the ultimate goal, is making somebody shake their head in disgust.
Success.
Yes.
We can cross off that question about how to define success.
So I started a lot with targeting like wordplay. I've always incorporated words into whatever visual art I've done, and this was an easy, transition for that. But I think that, I don't know, I try to not be too offensive, but at the same time, I don't want to temper what I like, what I think is funny, or why I'm doing it, just in the off chance that somebody might feel offended. I'm never, really insulting to anyone other than maybe some political people that deserve it. But I'm unapologetic about the F-bombs. So
yes.
They're there. If you don't like the language, I'm not for you.
But there's a good mix. I feel like there are some that could be great for, kids out there, and then some that would be great for our kids at heart.
For sure. We were just talking before we turned on the mics about cats. I love cats. I'm currently wearing my favorite cat necklace, and I have a lot of cat-centric stuff. I have a lot of food-centric work because it's my day job. Is I'm in the restaurant business. My husband's a chef. So a lot of where my brain goes all day is in that direction,
too. Oh, so you're both creatives.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't have too much, crossover. He's in the kitchen, I'm in the office.
Yep.
And it's a good balance, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the first piece that I did actually that made me start wanting to get back into embroidery, I did it a little bit when I was much younger, probably about 10 years old, and then I got away from that. But I actually made him a little embroidered sprig of thyme. And it says, "Ain't nobody got time for that."
Oh my
and it
God.
Hung in our kitchen. And I was like, I can do that for other people too.
Yeah.
So that started everything.
And how long ago was that?
I think that was for Christmas, like 2016.
Oh.
So it's pretty recent that I started really hitting the hitting the bricks with this whole thing. So
how did you first get into embroidery? Because it's always kind of fun to meet a younger person who does like an old lady's hobby.
Absolutely. Well, first off, I may look young. I am a very old lady. I always tell everybody, like, that is my ultimate goal on like a Saturday night, is to sit on my couch with my cat and stitch and like watch Downton Abbey or something. Oh. I am 97 years old.
Sounds like
really, that's yeah. my ultimate goal. But I mean, I've always had, I don't know, sort of a gravitation to tedious things, I guess, is maybe, you know, putting a positive slant on it. But I like to hyper focus on small things. And I went to school for art history. And so I studied by reading and writing and analyzing things rather than hanging out in a studio and being able to express myself in a, you know, purely visual way. Mm-hmm. So I've always spent a lot of time, you know, like I said, hyper-focusing on small things, and cross-stitch really falls right into that box. So I enjoy just it's a way to sort of shut your brain down, and it helps. You know, it's calming and it's creative in the same way. And
I feel very similarly when I create art, especially painting or drawing. Like, there is this hyper focus where I feel like my brain is slowing down and speeding up at the same time.
Exactly.
Like, you're feeling everything, and it's very calming and exciting because you're producing something.
Exactly. Yeah, it's nice to have that feeling of once you get over the hump of, oh, is this going to work? This is so frustrating.
Oh, my God. I was just dealing with that. I know exactly what you mean. Like, and then you can kind of go on autopilot once you feel that bump.
But while you're still climbing that, you're like, am I wasting my time? Is this 4 hours that I'm just going to throw into the trash? But
yeah,
usually not.
That was how I always felt when I was grading chemistry homework when I was a teaching assistant. Mm-hmm. It's very like tedious, and you just do it and you zone out, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Do you have a favorite cross stitch or piece that you've made that you feel like best represents you?
I may have changed my mind if I think about it more, but my first gut instinct is I did a larger format piece that is a portrait of Bob Dylan, and his face is completely comprised of the lyrics of his song Subterranean Homesick Blues. So it's this really intensely, I don't know, it's a little bit jumbled until you get close to it, and then you can, you know, pull out his features and the lyrics, which is one of my favorite songs of his. And it's just an 8x10, but it's a larger one for me, and I feel like it definitely represents a lot of why I'm doing this, and you know, who I am. I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan, and I also just love the way that words can come together and be bent and smushed in different sizes and colors and shapes, and the piece changes the closer you get to it, and it's fun.
That sounds amazing. I would like to see that.
Yeah, I do a lot of my work. Like I said, I'm 97 years old, and they do have like apps and things you can download that create cross stitch patterns for you. And you know, you sit there on your iPad, and you know, you click little boxes and make different colors. At least that's what I've gathered from seeing clips of it, because I've never used one. I have a very large piece of graph paper, and I do it all by hand, and then I translate that to the cloth. So.
Wow.
It's a process.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't have all the high tech stuff. I don't know. I'm a little afraid to make that jump. Yeah. I feel like I'm having so much fun doing what I'm doing, and really that is the underlying current in everything. It's like I said this before, I don't want to change either the method or the outcome. I feel like I'm on a good path.
Mm. Yeah. And so from conception to completion, how long would you say on average does your process take? I know bigger pieces versus smaller or more detailed, but...
Yeah, I mean, we have a show coming up, a festival actually this Saturday, and so I always like to have a couple little smaller pieces there because people will, you know, generally walk by and say, $30 I can give that to my husband. Yeah.
Various price points.
Exactly. Yeah. So like a little piece that's like a 2x3, I did one last night. I think it was about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they take a little while for sure. I mean, the larger ones, I mean, it goes up in scale for sure. I mean, I have some larger portraits in addition to the Bob Dylan, even though that one was a different style. But they're all about the same size, about 8x10s. And I never really cataloged how long they took, but dozens of hours.
Yeah.
A long time.
I would imagine it requires a lot of patience. I mean, you were talking about hyperfocus. Yeah, that's
it is definitely a labor of love. I remember there was one night I was working on, I think it was my portrait of Van Gogh, and I went up and I went to the bathroom and I looked at myself in the mirror and my eyes were so bloodshot. I was like, I have to stop this hurting myself.
Van Gogh would appreciate that.
I know, probably. Right? It probably was all meant to be that way.
Bleed for your art. See, I told you it'd be funny, right?
It's true. No, whenever there's like a little task of minutia that needs to be done, I'm knowing the volunteers, I'm like, I'll untie that knot, I'll do the weird thing. I like doing that. Give it to me.
I feel like everyone would want to be your best friend then.
I know, right?
So you have an Etsy shop and you also sell your work at various like fairs and things. So what has your experience been monetizing creativity? Mm-hmm. And if you could, would you do it full time?
I'm going to answer the second question first. Yes, I would love to do it full time. But my experience has really been positive with Etsy. I know a lot of people have a love-hate relationship with it. They do charge a lot of fees, and they're changing their whole structure in that they just started encouraging people to do 100% free shipping. Like, they're really trying to move in the direction of Amazon. I don't blame them from a business standpoint. It does sort of, you know, hit the individual sellers with more encumbrances. But like I said, I have the luxury of just doing this for fun. I'm not paying my bills with this, so I'm not in a place where I'm going to let it dissuade me. Just adjust my prices as I need to and have fun. But honestly, I've had a lot of success with it. I've met a lot of great people that I wouldn't have met before. Like Laura, I wouldn't have been at this, wouldn't have been at the Equinox Fest a couple of years ago and seen you. But it's been a great way to connect with people that, you know, I knew from high school that I haven't seen in 15 plus years. And they're all of a sudden like sending me messages asking for custom pieces. They have a fun little blurb that they want to give their husband for Christmas. And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to stitch that for you. It's been a good way to connect, I think. And having an extra couple of dollars every now and then is not too bad. Yeah. So and I haven't, like I said, I'm very fortunate in that I haven't had to rely on the funds, and I'm able to just take some of my free time. Like I mentioned that I work in the restaurant industry, so my hours are maybe a little bit different than what some people are used to. I mean, I'll get out of work and get home and it's 11:30, and I eat dinner and your brain is still worrying a little bit, and it's better for me to stare at, you know, a piece of Aida cloth than it is at the television. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I do both at the same time, but it still feels more productive.
It's almost like a podcast or radio.
Exactly
at that
right. Yeah, that's just some white noise. It's there, but it helps me to just decompress a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear sort of the comparison Amazon and Etsy, because I think of those as like either totally different consumers, totally different markets, or the same consumer who's buying different products on each side.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, Etsy, they're based in Brooklyn and they try and do the handmade local hipster thing, but you get the same people buying stuff on Etsy that are buying stuff on Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely shop both, but there's stuff I would never buy on Amazon that I do buy on Etsy and vice versa. Yeah. Obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know Etsy is just, I mean, when their sellers sell more items, then Etsy gets more money. So they're trying to boost their sales in however way they can. But I mean, it is what it is. If you choose to sell through that platform, you are going to pay fees.
Yeah.
Every time they change their structure, I see, you know, all these message boards blow up, or the internet just like goes up in arms about it. And I get it. Nobody wants to pay extra for basically nothing else. That they're not giving us anything else. They're just saying, sorry, this is now this percentage, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's still probably at the end of the day cheaper and easier than you say doing it yourself on your own website or something
absolutely.
Like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And plus, I mean, all of the time that would take to just every element of building a website, my brain just started wearing. Yeah, no, I'm gonna pay Etsy to do that.
Yeah. Even if you built the website, you have to figure out a way to get people
exactly.
to go onto
That's
it.
That's the thing. So it's fine. It's not a perfect system, but it'll do.
As far as selling art in person, do you have sort of a strategy that you like to follow as far as like how many you want to do a year, or do you just hit up the ones that are your favorite places to go, or, you know, how do you pick
and choose? I don't have a strategy. I am totally winging it at this point. And I mean, my hours are what they are. There's only so many like Saturdays I can take off a year.
Right.
So I end up doing a few in the Exeter area. My father actually is an artist in Exeter. He has a small studio, and we do a couple of shows based out of his studio a year too. So that's just a fun, more little local one.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I was actually that leads us into the next question. You come from a very creative family.
I do.
So would you like to tell us about your childhood, growing up in a creative family, kind of what both your folks do and how that influenced you?
Absolutely, yeah. So I am an only child. Both of my parents are artists. And luckily, I mean, they imparted that on me for sure, especially, I mean, just an absolute love for art. Every vacation that we went on was more or less like, all right, well, which museum are we going to here?
Yeah.
We never did, you know, the traditional Florida Disney trip. Instead, we went to, you know, see beautiful art.
Mm-hmm.
And
good choice.
in hindsight, my friends are all like, what? I was like, no, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
And it's paid off. So, you know, when I got a little bit older and we were looking at colleges and was never quite sure exactly what I wanted to do, because I knew that I had, you know, a lot of creative feelings, but I wasn't necessarily sure that I wanted to be, you know, a painter or a photographer or a printmaker. And my parents always, they were the ones that were like, go to art school. Go to art school. Yeah. Nobody's parents tell them to go to art school.
I was just going to say.
Nobody's parents do that.
That is
I'm
amazing.
Like, they're nuts. I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know if I would tell my children that. I don't have any kids, but thank God. But thank God for them. Like, they don't have to listen to my good advice. But no, I flitted around a little bit. I went to a couple of different schools. The only thing I never changed was my major. I always knew I wanted to study art history because I did have a strong background in writing and language, and I didn't want to depart from that. And so I studied art history very briefly at the Art Institute of Boston. I lived in Cambridge. And then even briefer, I went to NASCAD, which is the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design in Halifax.
Oh, interesting.
And then moved back home to New Hampshire and finished at the University of New Hampshire. And it was a great experience. I was the one who, you know, didn't want to go to UNH because all my friends went there, and I was like, it's gonna feel like high school. And by the time I went back, you know, I was older and over that. I don't care.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience. I merely met some fantastic professors, and I got exposed to a lot of wonderful art. So. Yeah, I don't use art history in my quote unquote day job, my real job, but I mean, it's in the forefront of my brain. I can still pull out a couple of zingers when I watch Jeopardy. So,
so your work is snarky and sassy and sometimes a little politically charged. Have
yes.
you found like your work has evolved in the current presidential?
Absolutely.
Administration.
Yeah. I mean, it's an outlet for me, and I do not try to censor myself when I'm making something. Even if I decide to make something and then not post it or not sell it or not show it to anybody, mm-hmm. it's like a way of just stabbing it out.
Like, it's your punching bag.
Exactly. I mean, it was shortly after the inauguration. I just sat down and I stitched two little pieces, and one of them just says Donald Trump is a very bad person, and then it has a little companion piece that says Mike Pence is worse. And it's just, I mean, that's how I feel. I think that he's a very bad person. And I mean, I've gotten a lot of people just, you know, come up and give me a high five because of that one, because what else what are we going to do?
When we talk to Beth Wittenberg, who's a Rochester-based painter, she talks about like painting and it's therapeutic and getting through some of the things that are happening politically at the federal level. But I really like the idea of cross stitch because it's very like voodoo doll.
It is. Yeah. And it's a, you know, historically a pretty feminist art too. So, I mean, there's that basis.
True. Have you offended anyone? Do you have any good stories?
Absolutely.
About? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I have any really good stories, but, I mean, I have a big hoop, it's a like an anatomical drawing of the female reproductive system. And there's a little like the GOP elephant just sitting right there, and it says the elephant in the womb. And I tend to bring that with me to shows too. And every once in a while, someone will come in, they'll look at it, and they'll just turn right around and walk out the door.
Wow.
And I mean, at that point, I'm like, bye.
Yeah.
You're not, you don't need to be in here anyway. I don't want your money.
That is my favorite of your pieces.
Well, thanks.
It's on the banner of your Etsy page, right?
It is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Yep. I just, I've said this word about, I think, three times already, but I just feel unapologetic about it. I don't, I think that the message I'm trying to get across is positivity, is equality, is that Donald Trump is a very bad person. And also, you have cat to be kidding me, right, meow. Like those, that's the span that I'm working with.
There's something for everyone.
Exactly. Come on down.
I love that.
I had a girl who came in to my, it was actually a show that I did at my father's studio, and she came in with her sister, and it's a long story that doesn't really matter, but we realized that we had a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon connection, and so we talked for a little while, and then she ended up contacting me at Christmas time asking me to make a little piece for her sister that just had a little bird on it, and it said, "You're a whore and that makes me sad." I was like, these are my people. Like, it's like she and her sister had a wonderful relationship. They loved each other. And it was just like, oh, here, have a bird.
That's a great relationship.
It's like it's like a genuine, like, I love being able to do custom work for people because they're hilarious. And I don't even understand half of them. And I'm like, yeah, this is absolutely your weird Wizard of Oz Star Trek mashup. Let's do this.
Or mine,
yep.
Which was for Jeff. And it said, well, actually, it was based on one you already had.
Mm-hmm.
You had already had it. So the one I saw said, this will be bleeped out, but it said, "F you, you fucking f-."
Mm-hmm.
And it had a rose, like the Beauty and the Beast rose almost. Like, it was very poetic. And so we did the exact same lettering, except it was a nat 1 on a d20, which is a bad thing when you game. And we have it hanging in our game room, and Jeff, my husband, loves it.
Yep.
It's so great.
And then that's the good, because I have a lot of customers that I don't expect to gravitate towards the profane ones.
Mm-hmm.
The first show that we did a couple years ago with the team, Equinox Fest.
Yeah.
I was asking my father, you know, I'm looking at all my work, and I was like, should I bring the ones that have swears? And he's like, I don't know, try it. Like, worst case scenario is, like, if people are upset about it, we can take them off the table. So it's like, okay. They were the only ones I sold.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I know how this is going to go. So I started, you know, bringing more and making more. And it'll be like the sweetest. It looks like your high school librarian. She walks in, she's, I will have that one. And it's just, it's like F and then like 27 U's and then CK. And it's with a little flower, and it'll like sit on your mantle, and nobody knows it's there. They're just like, oh, look at that beautiful purple rose, until you get over to it. And it's that one I also stitched for political reasons. It was just, that was the only word that was coming to my mind.
Just like, that's gonna be a long beat.
Yep. I did that one for you.
Yeah, we don't censor our guests in that. They can say whatever they like, but we do want to try to have anyone of any age listen. But I kind of think the beeps are humorous and almost add more of a
absolutely
good vibe.
Yeah, I was listening to your other episodes, and I was like, oh, I'm really good. I don't know, how am I going to talk about this without saying anything?
No, say all you want. I just will be like, beep, 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 beep.
Oh, golly.
My finger on the beep button. But we do have like a preset, like if you think of wave lengths of vocals, we have a preset beep, and like I'm going to have to
double it. That one's
going to
be good. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I think it's a great creative challenge as an editor to figure out how to do that now. Oh my God.
So when you were talking, I had this picture in my mind of like the grandkids coming over and mm-hmm. seeing it on mm-hmm. grandma's mantle and being like, Grammy, what does that say?
Yeah, well, you know what? Start them young. It's this is real life, everybody. I know. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like we'll have, you know, families come through all these family-friendly art fairs. And that's another I kind of feel a little bit bad about the kids when they're old enough that they can clearly read and they're looking at it because they're like, what's that? And the parents, I'm always watching them like kind of hiding behind the table wondering what's going to happen if I'm going to get snapped at because I am one of these days. But it's generally been a very good, very welcoming experience where they're like, oh, that's funny. Yeah, we're not going to buy that, but it's funny.
Yeah.
Don't say that.
At the Main Street Makery in Durham, there's a little side room where they keep all the things with swears. Mm-hmm. And there's a sign right at the door that says, you know, just so you know, there's some colorful language in this room.
Yeah. We try and snag people like at the front of the tent when they're walking in, especially if they seem to have young kids. We're like, well, these are a little off color.
Yeah.
If that's okay.
Yeah. It's a good way to manage it.
Yeah, it sometimes works. But like I said, I don't feel too bad. It's just a word.
So how would you recommend if someone's listening to this and they're like, ah, I want to do that. Like, how would one get into this? And, you know, what are the obstacles and the opportunities within it? Like, you know, as size, like, can you go, you know, the size of a giant mirror on a wall, or can you go super tiny, or, you know, like, how would you recommend someone start and what can you do with it?
I mean, there are so many ways to start. There's a huge Instagram following right now of so many amazing embroidery artists, not all cross stitch. A lot of them are just a free form. But I would definitely suggest looking online. There's an artist, her name, she goes by Fiance Knowles on Instagram. She's a South African embroiderer and her work is unbelievable. It's almost like thread painting.
I think I follow her or someone like that. I follow a couple.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's a lot of different paths to go down. Her stuff, like she's done these really funky embroideries on like vintage, like badminton rackets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like she uses the squares in the netting of the racket rather than, you know, piece of fabric. Wow. It's wild. But there's no limit to what you can do. My mother's always telling me that she wants to turn some of my pieces into like these big murals because that's how her brain works. It's like, let's do it big. Let's make it big. I'm like, how? She's like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. So, I mean, definitely it's really, really flexible. You can find inspiration just about anywhere. There's all sorts of books with, you know, patterns and ideas for you to get started. Even if you just go down to a craft store, I mean, they do have, you know, specific, you know, thread and embroidery stores, but you can walk on down to your Michaels and they have a lot there to get started. I would recommend anyone would, as long as you have patience.
Yeah.
Or don't rush yourself.
Or someone who needs to learn patience.
Exactly. That too.
What's the biggest? Oh, they're covered. I have some embroidery hoops up there. What are the biggest sizes that you've seen them come in? I'm just curious.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not
you
sure.
You really want a huge one, don't you? You're like,
I like the potential of that. Yeah. Something
they
about
definitely
that.
Exist in that size. I mean, they're hard to find. I know there's like, you know, woodworkers who make beautiful custom hoops that you could probably source out. But I mean, to walk into, like I just said, like a Michaels or something, probably like 8 inches. I don't think they really get much bigger than that in diameter.
So do you also knit, or are these like the two clubs that don't interact?
I do not knit. Okay. Nothing against knitters.
Those bastards.
It's not like the Jets and the Sharks, but I would love to. It's something that I've never started.
It would be a fantastic movie if it was like two rival gangs, but they were all kind of older lady hobbyists that did like, you know, like these, you know.
Absolutely.
When you're a knitter all the way.
I would definitely watch that.
They have their knitting needles as weapons. Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about all the weapons we can use here.
Yep. That's a lot of sharp objects in both hobbies.
Throwing symbols at each other. It's good.
All right. We got to go work on a screenplay, I think.
Well,
I want to write this. This is awesome. I was thinking I do like little hobbies, you know. Yeah. I mean, not hobbies, little movies as a hobby, and I really now want to make.
Well,
that
there
movie.
You go. If you need a 97-year-old to play,
you might be our star cast, your star role.
You'll be the head of the crochet gang.
Oh, there you go. I like
the cross stitch gang.
That's the great thing about this podcast. You never know what the heck's going to come around the corner. You write all these questions, and I didn't think we were going to make this movie,
nope.
But now we are.
Here we are.
I asked that question because when I was a kid, I really wanted to learn how to knit. I really like function in like mm-hmm. to a fault, and I hate it that about myself, but I've always recognized like I'm gonna learn how to knit because then I can like make my own clothes. Mm-hmm. Like what a cool cough saving thing, whatever.
Works for the apocalypse too, so yeah.
Yep,
good skills.
Another love of mine. I love the apocalypse.
Well, it's coming, girl.
I know. I'm a little prepper, and that's what my last movie was about.
Okay,
about the apocalypse.
Perfect.
It's a whole other tangent. We should hang out because I feel like we know a lot in common. It is coming.
Oh, golly.
Sorry. You were a kid and you had a dream.
We just turned your childhood dream into the end of the earth. And I'm sorry about it.
Forget what I was going to say. I need to learn how to knit now.
Seriously, you're on a clock.
You need to run. Don't
walk. Laura's got the food. I'll make the clothes.
Yeah, yeah. You'll keep us laughing in the basement when nuclear apocalypse is happening.
That's my one skill. Me and the cat in the basement.
Our bunker will just be like covered in cross stitches.
There you go.
With swears.
Yes, I'll just be the one with the swears.
Oh, and side note, don't forget your pets when prepping for the apocalypse.
It's
you
true.
Should have dog and cat food and kitty litter and all that stuff too. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty bad about it because I prep it, but then I run out, and so I run downstairs and grab what I had. I'm like, oh, I'll get more, you know, litter later or whatever, and then I don't. So mm-hmm.
I can't believe you didn't say bunny food.
And bunny food. I'm so sorry, Sarah. Get a surplus of bunny food just in case. Because that's what she
did. I gathered. Don't bunnies just like eat your house? Isn't that bunny food?
Oh, so you have listened to other episodes.
My girlfriend had a bunny, and that thing would just, it was she lived in this funky like Victorian house in San Diego, and the rabbit would just munch on all the baseboards. And
my rabbit's pretty well behaved, and she hasn't chewed on anything yet that's like not replaceable, but her favorite thing is our books. So the bottom shelf of all of our bookshelves are like books that I stole from the thrift store.
They're dummy books, so she still feels like she's doing it. Yeah.
And like all of my textbooks, so she's totally destroyed. Ooh. My econ book from grad school, like,
so she owes you like $3,000.
Let knowledge feed you, Luna.
Well, my father-in-law was an economics professor, and so I told him that, you know, his grand bunny chewed up the economics book, and he was super flattered. Like,
oh, she went for that.
She's got great taste.
She gravitated. That's funny.
I give her an A+.
How are we going to drive this train back? There's no transition.
We are off the reservation here.
Oh, my God.
We'll just have an awkward silence, and then we'll jump in with a real question.
No, I have one. I just thought, because I feel like you're fairly famous with this really awesome business that you have, especially with the puns. Do people come up to you and try to give you ideas, like pitch, oh, you should make,
yes,
not like custom orders, but like, you
yes.
should go do this. Does it get annoying? Do you like it?
No, I like it. I don't think I've ever done any of them, but yeah. I mean, I appreciate it.
No one's knocked it out of the park.
No, I've never been like, wow, why didn't I come up with that?
Do you hear the same ones, maybe?
No.
Like more basic ones?
No. No. I think people, some people just like, they have a pun that they love or something that is really like connected to something that they care about, or it's like something really totally weird and off the wall that must make sense to them. And I'm mm-hmm. just like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Will you do a pun that is like been said before, that you've heard before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the, you have cat to be kidding me, right? Meow. Like I didn't make that.
Yeah.
Up, but it's adorable.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I use it. I mean, I try not to take, you know, things from just one specific person. I have stitched quotes or tweets that I found to be especially gripping, but I mean, most puns, I feel like those are sort of in public domain at this point. If they're really silly, ain't nobody got time for that. Like, come on.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to want a custom bunny one. I haven't figured out what it would say, but come up with a pun.
Economics bunny, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
What's the one I used to say at your house all the time? Remember, I used to say one. You and Aaron always laughed. I don't know about politeness or not, but... Oh my God! It's something about being
something
in my house
like
or something.
Pop, pop, pop! Get off my lawn or something like hippity. That.
Shh, stop laughing! I'm gonna say it. Hippity hoppity! Get off my property!
Oh, yep, I can definitely do that.
Oh, and Luna would love that.
She's got a little wall of bunny art above her bunny's little corner of the room. So
that's adorable.
It is. Very cute.
Actually,
or crazy.
I love the crazy. I'm here for the crazy.
Oh, I don't know where it is. I've got a print of her bunny that I did for her too.
That's adorable.
Somewhere around over there. Yeah,
somewhere.
Is it all like, you know, tiny bunny art, like on like the floor level so she can see it?
I'll see. She'd eat it.
That would be crazy.
She would eat it.
She would eat it. Yeah.
Again, great taste. My favorite pun is in a joke, and Jeff is going to murder me because I'm going to say it, and he thinks it's the dumbest thing in the world.
See, that's how you know it's good.
Right? No, this one really is the dumbest one in the world.
It's so great. It's not mine. I don't know. I heard it somewhere, and it imprinted on my soul. It's a joke, though. Where does Napoleon keep his armies?
Oh, I don't know.
In his sleeveys.
Oh my goodness.
I can't even get over that. I think I heard it 20 years ago and it has still been my number
one. See, that's what like somebody would walk up to me with a joke they thought of 20 years ago.
Yeah. I didn't think it up for the record, but I wish I did. I could have died happy at that point. It's so good.
I'm really
glad. It's all downhill from there.
It is. Yeah.
I'm really glad that makes you so happy. I'm laughing at you.
Good for you, Laura. Good for you. Right?
It actually does get funnier, though, because that's probably the seventh time that I've heard you say that.
Yeah, right? And it is. Like, you know, because he was such a tough little guy and, like, it's on many levels. It's adorable. Like,
everyone loves a good Napoleon joke, so.
And cute words, you know, like what Tom Haverford does on Parks and Rec. Mm-hmm. If you've seen, you know, he's like, oh, my toesies, my fingies, my chicky nug nugs. Like, he just makes these cute little things that, or the writers do the show, and I just appreciate that.
I think that you do his voice so well, and I love it every time you do that.
Oh, thank you so much.
No, like, really, you nailed that.
So, what inspires your cross stitches? It sounds like a lot of things. And then what does that process look like once you have an idea in your brain?
So it is a lot of things. I keep like a running list of ideas when they pop up in my brain. I keep it on my phone. And at this point it's so long and I have some of them crossed out and then some of them like I'll scroll through when I'm, you know, feeling particularly at a block and I'm like, all right, let's go back through the idea train here. And some of them I'm like, that is a terrible idea, but I don't take it off because it's there to remind me that not all ideas are good.
Yeah.
But I've revisited a couple of them, but I mean, I really pay attention to current events, things that are going on. And we've already talked about this, but some of them, you know, are definitely politically slanted. And, you know, my process is come up with a couple of funny little words that make me laugh. If it makes me laugh, I want to share it. And then from there, I try and turn whatever that little phrase or pun or tweet or sentence might mean to me into a very simple visual representation as well. Sometimes the picture itself is a pun and the phrase might not necessarily be. I don't think I'm explaining that well. I just did one that's a line from, you know, a terrible I think it's like a 2000s, maybe it's a 90s rap song, Sugar Sugar, How You Get So Fly, and it's just got a little fly on it. So oh like the God. Phrase itself isn't a fly, but it's got a fly. Yeah. So, I mean, things like that. I mean, I just try and make them a little God, silly.
That's cute.
And now that song's that now. In all of your heads, and I'm sorry.
How did you come up with the name Hot Cross Puns? Because between that and the elephant in the womb, I was on your Etsy and I was just like, this is the most clever woman alive.
Thanks. It was so funny. I like I said, I started to make a couple little pieces and I didn't want to start an Etsy store until I had, you know, a shop to put up. I wasn't just going to put one thing there and be like, wait for him to come in. So I had been, you know, contemplating it for months. And it's funny, this actually happened. I mentioned earlier that my husband's a chef. He owns a restaurant, and we went through the whole process of opening the restaurant about 11 years ago, and we had everything. We had, you know, the business plan. We had the location. We bought all the equipment, did all the work inside. Still didn't have a name. It's like the name is the last thing to go. It feels so important. It carries so much weight with it. And I live in Exeter, and I work in Manchester, so I have a lot of time to just sit in the car. And I just started coming up with terrible puns involving embroidery. And I had a list of those. And then I went and I started Googling them to see if somebody else had already beaten me to it. And my first choice, somebody had beaten me to, which in hindsight, I'm fine with because I don't like it as much. And so here I am on Hot Cross Puns.
Awesome. It is extremely memorable and awesome. Yep. And well, I thanks. Love it. And I mention it to people and they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, you know.
That's awesome. I love that. I feel
like it's definitely famous in the Seacoast. So
it's like, it's a it's a perfect combination of like art and function. Like it tells you what your business is in a way that totally makes sense to me once you know what it is. And it's also like cute and clever.
Well, yeah. Thanks. You know, there's a lot of people I think they misread it and they will say to me, Hot Cross Buns. And I'm like, well, no. There's nothing about baked goods in this one.
No buns.
But I have no idea what I'm doing. I figure it out every day. I sit down and with an idea, and it feels like I start from scratch every single time, which is an adventure.
Yeah. It's the process, not the product, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I was mentioning before, all of the embroidery artists that are out there that are real capital A artists. This is what they do. They have amazing vision. It's inspiring to look at them. And at the same point, I'm like, oh man, I don't have any clue what I'm doing. I don't spend a lot of time, you know, comparing myself to other people. That's, again, not why I'm doing this. I'm underlining this 5 times. I'm doing it just to have fun. And it's nice, you know, to be able to share with people. And if somebody wants to, you know, have one in their own home, that's like such an honor to me because I only make things that I like. I only make things that I agree with, that I think are funny, that I think are nice. It's an adventure.
I think that's probably good for everyone to hear and something that most people can relate to. It's just like, I don't really know what I'm doing.
Oh, I have no idea what I'm doing. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure like 90% of us don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
Definitely.
Yeah.
No, nobody's alone in feeling like that, yeah. For sure.
So if you've listened to us before, you know that we rapid fire question time. I figure this is the episode to be as cheesy as all
Let's
heck.
Do it.
Right? Like she's not going to turn her nose up at this weirdo-ness here. So it's time for that.
All right.
I'm just resisting the urge to go rapid fire because I do it every time.
Well, why would you not do that?
Because I keep editing it out.
Oh, no. I was just thinking, I was like, I haven't heard her do
that. No, I think you did one time in one, but I couldn't keep it in every time.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
It's a little repetitive.
I'll let you do the first one.
Most inspiring location you've traveled to?
Oh, goodness. First gut answer there would probably be New Orleans. Been there a bunch of times, and I know it has a reputation for, you know, being a party city and, you know, Mardi Gras, and et cetera, but it is a city full of beautiful art and the best food on the planet, and the architecture is gorgeous, and the people are lovely. It just feels so free and open. And I remember the first time we got there, you know, we stepped off the plane and walk into the French Quarter, and I just look around, and I was like, I'm never leaving. Yeah. There's beautiful graffiti everywhere, which I adore. And there's, you know, people sitting in the middle of the street with a typewriter, you know, offering you free poetry. Or mm-hmm. And like, it's fantastic. I love it there.
I love it too.
It's
beautiful galleries.
The best. Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you can go and actually see, you know, gorgeous highbrow art and, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff on the other end, but it's fun.
Yeah. After all these years, is there a physical hazard with cross stitch?
Yes. Absolutely.
So, like, do your fingers get, do you bleed a lot or?
No. I mean, I think the hazards that you would think of, like, you know, needle related, they don't, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
No. I mean, every once in a while, you know, I'll stick it in my thumb. I'm like, ow. But that's really the end of it. My shoulder kills me all the time. My elbow hurts. My fingers feel like they're a little arthritic, which I think may have come from the fact that I started playing the piano at the age of 5.
Oh, okay.
I don't do that as much anymore. But I mean, I've always done little tactile things with my hands. Mm-hmm. I bartend too. So, I mean, it's like my hands get sore, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try and not sit in the same position for too long, especially when I'm doing one of those larger pieces. Like I was saying, my eyes were getting all bloodshot. It's like my entire arm tenses up because I'm holding the piece with my left hand. So I just try and remember to take breaks and move around. But, yeah. You know. I am 97, so your body breaks down at some point.
Good advice for us all.
Yep, absolutely.
What's the craziest or weirdest custom order you've ever received?
My goodness. I honestly I haven't made it yet, and I don't want to give away any too much, but it is like a weird Star Trek Wizard of Oz mashup situation. I don't understand it. I haven't gone through it with her yet, but I just got a request. So
would you ever turn down a custom order?
Yes. If it was something that I really just didn't want to make, didn't agree with, I thought was negative or hurtful or, you know, mean, probably.
Have you had to?
No.
Oh,
no.
Well, that's fortunate.
I've only met really, really wonderful, awesome, positive, fun people.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, it's really worked out great.
Favorite color?
Yellow.
Favorite taste?
Garlic.
Very nice. Favorite smell?
Oh, goodness. Is it terrible that now all I'm thinking about is garlic?
I was just thinking, nobody's ever said the same thing for both.
I kind of feel like, I mean, my husband's a chef, and I mean, I have the luxury of just having fantastic food cooked for me all the time. Oh. And it's just like, it's such a, like a full memory is just like walking into the kitchen and smelling all this garlic and then eating fantastic food. So I'm gonna go with garlic.
Nice.
Favorite texture?
That one's hard.
It's because I didn't do the hint. Usually I do like the cat hands.
I was
when
just
I'm
gonna
it.
Say like my cat or
I was just gonna say chopped garlic.
Should go with that for sure. I don't know, maybe like a freshly sanded wood.
Ooh.
Some nice and velvety smooth.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Favorite sound?
My cat's purr.
Aww.
Yeah. He's such a purrer. He will like sit on your chest and just purr. He's a little machine. So, yeah. That one was an easy one.
Yeah.
Favorite movie?
Oh my. I don't know if I've ever been able to answer that question.
It's an impossible question.
That's
why we ask it.
Oh. I love horror movies. I'm like a total horror movie junkie. Like when I'm just sitting in front of the white noise machine, the television, like I will just turn on Netflix and find the worst horror movie I can find and put it on as my background. I don't understand what's wrong with me, but that is my white noise.
Mine is apocalypse movies.
Yeah.
So I feel you.
Like I'm friends with all these lovely, shiny, happy people who are like, oh, I can't watch that. That's so scary. I'm like, no. Like I'm taking a nap. Somebody's getting their face peeled off. It's so fake to me. I think it doesn't click. Like the things that bother me, the things that scare me, the things that keep me up at night are real. That is so fake. I think it's just easy to, you know, escape. So I don't know, maybe The Shining. Big Stephen King fan.
Are you excited about Dr. Sleep?
I am very excited about Dr.
Yeah,
Sleep.
Yeah, it looks good.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Last question. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Relax. Yeah. I'm a really, really anxious, just stressed out person. And I mean, I should tell my current self that too, for that matter, which is also, it's like when I stitch, I mean, it is, it's relaxing. It's forcing me to focus on what's here, what's now, what's in my hand. And I think that I could have probably benefited a little bit from that train of thought. I mentioned sort of moving around a lot. And when I was younger, it was just, well, this doesn't feel perfect. And this doesn't feel perfect. And it's like, nothing's going to feel perfect. Just do it. And I do have like a little hoop that I've made. And it just says that you don't have to be perfect. Just do things. Mm. And I think that's really where I'm focusing my energies now is you don't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be 100% all the time. Just do it because 50% is better than zero.
That's Creative Guts podcast feels good about that.
Yes.
I think everybody should feel good about that. I mean, obviously, it's not a bad thing to hold yourself to, you know, a high standard, but don't kill yourself if you don't reach there.
Yeah.
That'll just
you waste a lot of time.
You.
Yeah. So we end each episode the same every time.
So with that,
show us your creative guts.
So Rachel described herself as unapologetic a couple times, and I really loved how that really shows her art. She's sort of like the human manifestation of creative guts. So it was really great to have her on the podcast. And I also love that she's an old lady in a young person's body.
I feel that. Absolutely. I had known Rachel prior to this interview, but only slightly. We'd both been vendors at an art fair in Exeter, and I was immediately drawn to her then for her style as an artist and as a person. And this episode did not disappoint that idea of her that I had in my mind. She's such a charming person who, quite frankly, I want to be friends with somehow. Like, Rachel, you want to be buds? Like, you're really cool. And I get the old lady vibe a lot. So, like, I feel you there.
Yeah, me too. Let's all hang out.
Yeah. And embroidery is such a cool avenue for creativity. And I'm just jealous of all the cool she's making. That'll be beeped, but I feel like this is the episode to swear in because
absolutely
that's what she does.
There are swears. If you want to check out Rachel's stuff, you can find her on Facebook, Hot Cross Puns New Hampshire, and Etsy, Hot Cross Puns. But please proceed with caution. There is colorful language ahead.
As colorful as the colors she uses. If you want to hear more from us, if you want to get quick, easy links to all that cool stuff on Rachel and our other guests, you should check us out on Facebook, which is Creative Guts Podcast. If you're listening, you probably already figured this out, but we're available on all major podcast platforms. And feel free to share this with your fellow friends on their social media so that they can easily click on our podcast as well.
Thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
That just peaked. You were pointed away. We get the giggles a lot, so.
That's good.
We're trying to be good about taking turns, so I was like, it's her turn, I'll shut up.
She was not prepared for the volley, it's fine.
I think she wasn't prepared for my look. I think my look is what did it.
That's all right, that'll make a great blooper.
Exactly.